This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hello, everyone. I'm Brad Parsons, Vice President of Market Operations at Baptist.
Well, folks, today we have a great guest, Charlie Protzman, and many of you probably already know him. He's written well over 20 books. He's been in multiple industries, been in the world of continuous improvement for a very long time. But for those that maybe don't know you, Charlie, if you would introduce yourself to our audience and tell us a little bit about you and your background.
Okay, well, first, Skip and Brad, it's really an honor to be on your podcast, so I really thank you for including me on this. A little bit about my background. I started with a company called Allied Signal. It was actually Bendix and became Allied Signal. I worked with them for almost 14 years, and then I ended up getting into consulting based on the work that I had done at Allied Signal. So when I left Allied Signal, I was implementing Lean across our division. I was a strategic operations manager across six of the plants and decided to start my own company doing Lean consulting. So I started in 1997. We are now an international consulting firm. We work in, of course, the US, Canada, Mexico, Europe, and Asia. And I've first got into Lean, I would say back in 1985, before it was even called Lean, and have been learning ever since, and literally learn on every implementation that we work on.
Well, great, great intro, Charlie. You know, I was sitting there thinking about this as this weekend, actually. I know you and I talked a couple weeks ago, and I can remember where I was at when the word Lean was introduced. I can remember the books that I read that were surrounding it. I remember where I was when someone first introduced the word Six Sigma to me. And I remember starting off my career with the phrase TQM. And all of these different agile and so on, all these words have come about. But what are your general thoughts, Charlie, as you sit back and relax and reflect on this movement? What are some of your thoughts about where this movement is going in light of where it's maybe been at?
I think it's a really interesting question, Skip. When I first got into this, it was, like I said, back in 1985, there was a video that came out by a guy named Joel Barker called The Business of Paradigms. And that went through our company Bendix at the time. And we all watched the video, and that first got us thinking about change, and that you get stuck in these paradigms and you don't even realize that you're stuck in the paradigm. So a question that kept going around all the time was, are you in a paradigm? Just getting people to start thinking about opening their mind to change and that change is possible. Then a book came out called The Machine That Changed the World. And when that book came out, I called up my production manager, Denny O'Neill, and said, "Hey, Denny, you need to read this book." And I was actually on summer vacation at the time, but we had a printed circuit board company. We were big batching queue production facility. And this book started talking about something called One Piece Flow and talked about the Toyota system. So that got us down that path. And then Larry Bossidy took over Allied Signal. And he launched a four-day training course that was mandatory for the entire company. Everybody in every position in the entire company had to attend this course within 1 year. And this course introduced something called TQM, or Total Quality Management. And it was basically set up as teaching everyone a standard problem-solving model and how to do problem-solving. And as we went through the class, we would walk through each step of the problem solving model and then do exercises around that as part of the 4 days. So during that class, you may meet people from all over the company, from all different types of plants. But basically, from that point on, whenever you had to go work on a problem, everybody had a standard way to do it and everybody was familiar with the terms. And everybody did it the same way. So it was basically standard work for problem solving that they taught throughout this class. And I still use a lot of that training in my training today. So the idea with total quality management, which came from Japan at the time, was basically had primary metric of cost of quality. And cost of quality had four pieces. It was looking at prevention, appraisal, internal failures, and external failures. And if you could prevent the problem, you know, to begin with, it was much cheaper than an external failure where you may lose the customer. So we were basically taught this process, and the process started with something today they call it Hoshin Kanri or Hoshin planning or policy deployment, where the leadership sets the goals. And every year Bossidy had three or four goals. And the first couple were always the same. One was always improve your productivity by 6% year over year. One was to always improve your quality. And then they would add a couple different ones each year that the company would work on. And they flowed this down through something called trees. They called them total quality trees. And as the tree went down, you had branches, and the branches went to each of the departments. And then they would do something called catch ball, where you would go back and forth on here's the goal at Bossidy's level, here's the goal at our plant's level. What can I do in my department now to hit that goal? And I would put together our objectives based on that goal, go to my boss, and we would go back and forth and come to some agreement on what that was. And then that tied into our career development profile as our objective goals. And we were measured on how well we did. And we had to literally be ready to take those goals. I had them on my bulletin board at any time and be able to update your boss on where you were on those goals, which, of course, tied into all the problem solving that we did, because you had to do that to hit the goals. So through that whole process, they continually launched training underneath of this thing. We called it the TQM umbrella, and all these tools were part of that umbrella. And that included at the time JIT, which was just in time, Jidoka, which I know you're familiar with from Toyota, and then the idea of daily improvement or daily Kaizen.
Can I jump in there? Because I just want to, you know, we have this a lot on the podcast. It's really fascinating to hear, you know, different people's language, how it relates to some of the same improvement work. So today, in the Baptist organization, we do lots of strategy deployment. It's very similar to Hoshin Kanri. We've got A3s and a series of A3s that deploy through a very large, complex healthcare organization. In our A3 planning, we do lots of catch ball. That's a common word now for our organization. So love you calling out catch ball there. And we have lots of status updates. You know, we typically, what we see the most is kind of a monthly status update about kind of where we are with our goals and objectives and how they connect. We're most recently kind of tying that to daily management and trying to have more of a way to connect that to daily work. I'm curious what your thoughts are, if you'll share a little bit more around the importance of daily management and how to connect that to Hoshin Kanri or strategy deployment.
So daily management is critical for sustaining the operation. And a lot of times I'll see people do huddles, and the huddles are more or less a waste of time. You know, they'll go through, oh, here's how we did yesterday. Here's, you know, maybe here's what we're going to do today. And that's about it. The whole idea about daily management is, what do the trends look like? Are you trending the data? The big thing is, are you getting better or are you getting worse? You know, and do you know that?
Yeah.
So the real purpose of the huddle is, what problems do we have, and what are we going to do to, you know, to solve those? So it's really understanding what are the gaps that we have today, and what do we have to do to overcome those gaps to meet the daily plan. And the other big part of it is asking everybody in the huddle, if you're having huddles, is what ideas do you have? You know, get those ideas out of people's heads, which is, you know, where that waste of talent comes from, is when you're not doing that. But how do we take advantage of the ideas people have to keep improving, to keep making things better every day? And that's your daily Kaizen. That's where your daily Kaizen comes to. And the the linkage really should be from the Hoshin planning from your top level down to the person at the lowest level. Is that person should know how are they contributing to this goal up top. And everybody, all the arrows, David Hutchins has a really good example on this, but he basically has a triangle with all the arrows pointing toward the top. That's what you're trying to do, is get everybody aligned and working in the same direction. And that's what your daily management should be helping you with. The other part of that is, if I have a problem, you know, out on the nursing floor, for example, I should be able to get that all the way up to the CEO, if necessary, to solve it, you know, within 2 or 3 hours. Mm-hmm. So it's having that escalation process along with it, so that we're able to react and fix the problems as quickly as possible, so we don't have those external failures, so we keep the patients happy.
And that escalation connected back to tiered huddle systems, you know, et cetera, to be able to get that up the chain as quickly, kind of a help chain to get the needed resources and help in a timely fashion.
Yeah, it's a lot of places I've gone to over my career where people implement tools because they think they're supposed to.
Right.
100%. You know, the tools should help you. If they're not helping you, stop doing them. It doesn't make any sense.
Great point. Great, really good point, Charlie. You know, I did want to get your thoughts on something. You know, we're calling this the CI movement, lessons from a lifetime of improvement. But one thing that almost accidentally I learned, and I'd be interested in your perspective, is, you know, we call our improvement system the Baptist Management System. And that has served us very well for the last 12 years. And specifically, the reason it has served us is that when I use words like lean and agile and Six Sigma, not that there's anything wrong with those words, people seem to create a straw man in their mind. And then you either have to build up or tear down that straw man. But when I just call it, for us, the Baptist Management System, I'm able to define what is it we're talking about. What is this thing made up of? What's been your experience? Because I know, Charlie, you're all over the world. You're in China, you're in Europe, and obviously in the United States and other places. What's been your, because words matter, right? What's been your experience with language and words? Because I have found I have to do more disarming someone when they hear a phrase like lean, because they've already got a presupposition in their mind of what they think that means. What's been your experience, Charlie?
I think the interesting part with this is to go back to the other question for a second. When Womack came out with his book, Lean Thinking, that term was coined by, I think it was John Graphic. I forget exactly the guy's name, but it took the focus away from TQM, that total quality management. The nice part about the Baptist Management System is that it takes away those words, you know, to your point. But people do get hung up on the words with lean or Six Sigma. And what's happened since that book came out is TQM has basically gotten lost. And Hoshin Kanri went from the main tool, you know, where you start the whole process, to just a piece of lean. You know, there's this, you implement lean, you know, and you're eliminating waste, which obviously is the central principle. You have the TWI tools, you have all these different tools, but Hoshin just became a little tiny piece of this lean movement, when Hoshin really should be where everything starts.
I love that, you know, and again, just I had the privilege of having a great teacher in this space years ago, but Hoshin Kanri really being the anchor system is what we called it. We use the term the anchor system because everything, all these other tools and resources have to come back and have to point back to what are we actually trying to do in this department, in this unit, in this hospital? I mean, what are these goals that we can align to and have people kind of get engaged with?
Yeah, and then as far as all over the world, this lean term is all over the world now. I mean, literally in China, it's I'm working with a company over there called Benchmark Lean, and their motto is make lean popular. In Europe, basically lean has been transplanted over there because lean also started with, you know, the UK and the US. So lean has become the prevalent term. And the other part of it was Kaizen events, this 5-day, you know, one or half day of training and then 3 days of go do and then a report out, became the primary implementation method. And I have a lot of thoughts on that. I won't go into all that on this podcast, but that's not how Toyota implemented lean. You know, Toyota does daily improvement, not event style improvement. And they do, I don't want to say they don't do any of that. They do, you know, maybe 5-10% of that kind of thing. But most of it is the suggestion systems every day. And Toyota does so. So going back to the question again, Japan, you don't hear the term lean. You hear TQM, because Japan, the guiding management group in Japan is called JUSE, J-U-S-E, Japanese Union of Scientists and Engineers. They're the ones that created the Deming Prize. And just a note with that, my grandfather also taught the Japanese, and he's the one that actually recommended Deming to JUSE back in 1950 when Deming did his training. So the TQM really came from the course that my grandfather taught the Japanese, along with PDCA. And there's PDCA and PDSA. PDCA is Plan, Do, Check Act. PDSA is Plan, Do, Study Act. I personally tie PDSA more to Schuert's work, which was around the customer design cycle, where PDCA was more of generic problem solving, which really came, all the research I've done now, I can say this, came from the CCS course that my grandfather taught. So in Japan, it's still TQM. TQM is taught at the universities. You will hear Kaizen on the TV when you're in Japan. It's a normal word every day. They talk about Kaizen. So with the exception of Japan, everywhere else is lean. Japan, it's TQM. And TQM is built around the Deming Prize versus, you know, Shingo Prize or the Malcolm Baldrige Prize. They use the Deming Prize as their standard.
Well, a little comic relief there, Charlie. I was in Japan and, you know, we're from the South, of course. And I was with my friend that was a Japanese native and interpreter. And I used the word Kaizen. And he pulled me aside and said, hey, you probably don't want to use that. And I said, what? And he said, the way you're saying it, it means fix the books. He goes, you don't fix the books, do you, at your company? I said, no. And so then he taught me how to say it.
Well, then in China, they have a word Gaishen, which is the same thing, to change for the better, which I think is where the word Kaizen, you know, came from.
Gotcha. Well, see, I'm so glad to hear you talk about that, because I think language does matter, right? I'm a big believer in understanding variation and understanding kind of how it affects our thinking and how we should. But one of the things I've noticed sometimes is when I talk to people, they will instantly kind of interrupt me and they'll say, oh, you want to talk about Six Sigma. I said, no, I didn't say anything about Six Sigma. In other words, I'm not wanting to talk about the DMAIC model. We're just talking about variation. But people have interpreted that element of thinking is somehow foreign from what they call lean. But reality is, you know, a lot of this stuff came from that origin that you see in Toyota. But today, we like to package things up. I'm sure you've probably run into something similar like that, Charlie.
Yeah, basically all the TQ tools were packaged up and called Six Sigma. And Six Sigma is a whole marketing ploy that Motorola did. Michael Harry came up with the 1.5 sigma shift.
Right.
You know, because back then you had the normal standard deviation model. And it's not that there isn't a Six Sigma on the standard deviation model, but it's not, Six Sigma was much more sexy than Three Sigma.
Right.
So do you think we'll have new names in the future?
Oh, I'm sure we'll have new names.
Yeah, I bet we will.
I'm sure.
So Charlie, you've got a well-known consulting firm. You've been doing it a long time. I mean, kind of similar to Skip's question, when you go into companies now, do you have to figure out their language and kind of align to what they're doing, or do you have to kind of undo some of the things that they have done in an effort to get them recentered on really using the tools the way they're intended to be used?
So when I go into companies, I always tell them, I walk through something we call the change equation, which basically starts with a C, which is compelling need to change. So do you have a compelling need to change? And then I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm not here to say you have to do it this way, that way. I'm here to give you options. I can tell you what I've run into, what other companies are doing, what the literature says. I can walk you through the tools if you're interested, and through the thinking if you're interested. But in the end, it's up to you. It has to be your system. And if I do it, the monkey's on my back. I like to put the monkey on their back. And it has to be their system. You know, if I come up with a plan, then it's not their plan. It's my plan. So it's what makes sense for the business. You know, not every healthcare doesn't make cars. So you have to take and it's interesting, when I first got into healthcare, I had nothing. There weren't any books on healthcare at the time. None of that existed. So you had to just go with the principles, which was, how do I get things to flow, right? Love how do that. I make things flow as fast as possible? That's what we did in the emergency room. We completely upturned the model. And instead of the patient going to a room and everything coming to them, we moved the patient through the process. We broke about 48 paradigms during the process, and people said it couldn't be done. But our door-to-doctor times, which wasn't even a metric at the time, you know, came down to around 10 minutes. So it's just understanding the principles, and look at how do you apply the principles and what makes sense, or what's common sense for the application that you're doing.
Gosh, that's great. I mean, you know, Skip mentioned the Babbitt Management System, but we have principles that we've patterned around the management system that really mirror the Shingo Institute's principles. And we learned a lot from the Shingo Institute and that kind of how we organized our thinking there. But we talk about principles a lot. We try to connect it back to the principles for the same reason that you just articulated a whole lot better than I do. So thank you for that.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Really, really good though. Let's keep on. I want to poke on that a little more. You know, it happens to be that I just had a conversation with a large organization that wanted to reach out. Some of their questions, you know, weren't exactly, they wanted to kind of know what should I use? What tool should I use? What magic wand should I pick up? And I took us back to the principles, because I said, you know, everything that we happen to use is a manifestation of our principles. If they don't come out of the principles, then what's the point? And if something else in the future is a better manifestation of the principle, guess what? I'll switch to that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like that. And Charlie, I think what I'd love for you to respond to is, you said it too. I mean, we're enamored with the tools. In your experience, why do we want to, and I say we, kind of collective we, why do we want to grab that tool and say, oh, that's going to do it, that's going to be it, instead of acknowledging kind of the underlying infrastructure and the principles at play?
I think I have a couple answers to that. But one, I think it emerged with when the Lean Thinking books came out, and then all of the books came out around Lean, and they were all driving tools. You know, a lot of the LEI books were learning to see, right? Seeing the whole, making materials flow. They were all around specific pieces of how do you do this? How do you implement this? But not necessarily really getting into all the thinking that was behind the system. And to really get the thinking, you have to read the Ono books, the Shingo books, the Mondin books. Those are the books. The Ono books are just fascinating. You know, I probably read them every couple of years. I go back and reread the books and still learn things from them. And Ono even talked about in the very beginning how he had to brute force in the process. I mean, whenever you go from batch to lean, whether you start with people first, tools first, however you decide you're going to implement this thing, once you go from batch to flow, that's the resistance. That's where your resistance comes from. And the challenge is, how do you overcome that resistance? Because our minds tell us batching is more efficient. Your mind is always working against you with all of this, because what, you know, our minds tell us, oh, we should do pre-assembly. Oh, you know, your minds are constantly telling you things that aren't lean. So you're always.
Isn't that fascinating?
It really is.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's so good, Charlie. You know, the reality is, what you were saying is, it's counterintuitive. You're absolutely right. I've literally one time, Brad and I were together. It's been years ago. If I didn't remember it. We were doing some work in an emergency department, and I had a doctor tell me, no longer with our company, but he had a doctor publicly tell me, he said, Skip, I don't know if you know this, as he was patting me on the head. He said, batching is significantly more efficient than this flow thing. Do you understand that? And I remember responding, I had to embrace the principle of humility. And I said, you know, I know I don't believe that's true, but I'm concerned that you do. And we just kind of ended it with that point. But Charlie, you know, I just want to say, on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, it's really kind of hard for me to believe we've already went through 30 minutes. But
yeah, we're just getting warmed up, Skip.
Hopefully you would be willing to come back again, Charlie, in the future. And I think this is a great coffee shop conversation. You get to see things from different cultures. You get to see things around the world. In addition, so you've kind of did that mile wide and a mile deep, you know, versus some have only done the mile wide and an inch deep. So, Charlie, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experience, your wisdom, your perspectives on things. And on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, hopefully you'll come back again in the future. But thank you once again for everything you do.
Well, thanks, Brad and Skip, for having me. And I really appreciate it. It's really been an honor to be on your podcast. And I'd love to pick this up again from where we left off.
Awesome.